We come now to the last section of this book, and yet such a crucial, crucial section. It introduces, we saw last week with this statement that Paul likes to introduce a conclusion with when he comes down here and he makes this statement, and he says, finally, and it is such a fitting conclusion to this book, as he reminds us that finally, when it's all said and done, having dealt with all of these other things, this is a very crucial part of this book, and he comes to this section that deals with Satan and his work. And as your outline suggests to you, verse 10 is the key to this passage and then to the rest of the section, which is then divided up into three sections. You see, be strengthened in the Lord and the power of his might. And again, we make reference to the fact that here, we will come back to this later, but at least this is a good reference to the present time. This word here, we get a word dynamic from it anyhow. It's a D-Y-N. We have this word here, which is another word for strength. We have this word, which is a word for strength. And if one is to go back to chapter 1 and verse 18, 19, I pray that the eyes of your understanding might be opened, so you may see the surpassing greatness of the power of God and so forth. He will use these words again, and that in one other, actually. And so, once again, he is bringing us from actually the prayer at the very beginning, now showing us why it is so crucial that we understand and that we see the surpassing greatness of the power of God. Now, as we come to the section divided, as you see in your outline, the three sections, the opposition we face, verses 11 to 13, the weapons needed to face this opposition, and the indispensable part that prayer plays in all of this in verses 18 to 20. Now, in light of that, just some things, and we are basically this evening going to continue in an overview, if you will, to give us a sense of the opposition we face. It's really where we're going to spend our time. Next week, we will be looking at the weapons needed, but we will see the need for weapons this week, but we will see the weapons needed. As we suggested last week, several things, by the way, it is significant in reading this last week, just the amazing part of this. If you look at this section that talks about the armor of God, there is no section on the armor of God that is extended on any piece of armor. No section so extended as the section on prayer in verses 18 through 21. And I will say this again, until we understand the surpassing power, if you will, I don't know, that's not a good term to use because it brings the same words for God. Until we understand the incredible power and the incredible influence and the incredible ability of Satan, the forces of Satan, to bring opposition to us in all that we do, we will never understand the incredible need for prayer. And so as you look at this business, part of the problem with this is that we don't even understand the enemy we face. And so we want to look at it again and see some of the things we saw last week, just as introductory, and then we will carry on from there. Last week, one of the things that we saw that is so important is when we get down to verse 12, and we look at the statement in verse 12, we see a distinct statement there. Let me just put this on here. This statement that it makes in verse 12, that it talks, this word right here, it is not warfare, it is struggle. My brother was for many years the wrestling coach. In fact, began the wrestling program at Biola. So I have attended many a wrestling meet. And also, Dr. Thomas's one son, whom I teach with and have taught with for many, many years now. His sons all wrestled, and I remember sitting with him watching one son, and then he would rush off while I stayed there to go watch two other sons in two other places, about 20 miles apart, all of them, watching them wrestle. And his pride now is that his grandson is sixth in the state of Illinois in wrestling as an eighth grader. And so anyhow, but this is that. This is not warfare. This is struggle. This is a combat. This is something we face. And it's interesting because James will use another term. He uses, and then Peter, uses this stratool, which is, the fact that we have this warfare going on. Our lust is waging war in our members. And uses another term. But the warfare is there. There's no doubt. And he will define some of this for us in this context here. Because, again, if one doesn't understand the enemy, one doesn't understand the need for prayer. One doesn't understand the need for the putting on of the power of God. So the issue here. He starts with this, and we understand that it is a struggle. The other thing that is very, so we begin with that, understanding that what we're dealing with is a personal struggle, a hand-to-hand combat that we're all facing. And it's fascinating, too, as he looks at this. He is saying that this, to us, to you, to me, this struggle is not, but the struggle is there, but the struggle is not. And it's fascinating when we look at this. You'll see this word right here. Face to face with, if you will, not this normal word is that word, right? Which antichrist? We have a lot of antis, okay? Anti-abortion, whatever. So that's a word one might expect. But you're dealing with struggle, and you're dealing with a face to face contest that is taking place with. And it's fascinating because he will give us a whole list of these. This word is going to keep coming down through here, but it's not the normal word that one might expect for against. So this face-to-face battle we have, and it is also significant, before moving it further, is that, again, so often we are of the mind that what our problem is as people. Uh-huh. Just to remind you of something, it's fascinating because we sort of think that, see? Whether it's the husband-wife, whether it's the parent-child, whether it's the church relationship, whether it's whatever the business relationship, we sort of think our problem is people and the real problem is not people. Isn't that interesting? You go back to James just for a moment. Whence come wars and fighting among you, James 4:1? Come they not hence... How do you like that King James word? Come they not hence of your lust that wage war in your members? You lust and cannot have, and therefore you fight. You desire and cannot obtain, therefore you make war. You know, it's interesting because the external problems we face are because of internal problems we face. And so often we look at that and it's everything else around us, and we need to come back to where it is. So anyhow, the struggle is here. It's not flesh and blood. It our problem is Satan that we have to deal with. And so you see this. It is for that, the fight, the warfare, the struggle. It is a personal struggle we all face. And by the way, the other thing, that the seriousness of the struggle we face is also brought out while we're here because... I need to get the next sheet. Just give me a moment. Notice, didn't find it there either. Doesn't matter. What verse are we talking about here? Let me get down here. Look at your verse 12. Go back. Taking verse 16, there we are, the shield of faith, that you may be able to extinguish the fiery missiles of the evil one. Now, I won't turn to that right now, but it's interesting because what they used to do is dip the arrows into a very flammable solution. And then they would shoot this arrow, of course, hoping that what it would do is that it would light things on fire. But you see, the term he's using here, the fiery darts, the flaming missiles, basically a suitable figure for the fierce temptations we face. And so when we're dealing with these struggles, we are facing a very fierce temptation. This is how he defines it in this passage. And it was, like I said, they would take these things, dip them in here, and then they would fire them. And so that's what we're dealing with, and therefore we must be ready. The other thing that we saw last week, just again, because it is a definite reminder for us, you notice in verse 13, let me put verse 13 up here because It is rather crucial that we see this. Not only is there the struggle, before we move on, not only is the struggle, but notice this, on account of this, take up the armor of God, and notice here again, that you may be able to stand, and again, it's, by the way, here is our word anti, see, against, and this is our word, and this is the word to stand, so that you may be able to stand against, and we'll come back to this, but it's interesting, this is the word we want, in the day, the evil one. Now, again, we were talking last week, and we again remind you. What's very fascinating in Greek is that the normal thing is to take the adjective, if you will, and put it over here. When you do it this way is because you want to equally emphasize both of these. And what you have here, if you look at this, it's interesting because our use of the article is identifying a particular day, a particular evil day. Very, very crucial because this is not just a generality. You know, there'll be evil days and whatever. That's not what we're talking about because we're talking about the fact that not only do we have a struggle, but there are set days that we all face that are peculiarly evil. I go back to you again and remind you. I read this to you. Here the noun and the adjective receive equal emphasis, and the adjective is added as a sort of climax. And you see the day, if you will, specifically to point out it is a particular day to begin with. That's the point, and it's a particularly evil day. There are two points I would make before we come back to this. What James would seem to suggest by the picture he draws in chapter 1 is that there's a process where he likens it to fishing, where he says, neither Pearlie and I are great fisher, men, women, whatever, fisher persons, but we sort of had fun doing it years back when we did take a vacation to do that. But we would head up to Rock Creek up there on the way up to Bishop, and we would camp out there for about a week just fishing the streams, and it was nice because they loaded it with these things that they'd raised in some fish factory somewhere, so therefore they didn't know how to face the world and they'd bite anything, so it was all right. And so we'd fish there for a week, then we'd head up to June Lake and we'd try the lake kind out. But I remember so clearly there was a fish. And the big ones are the ones that have learned the game. They have not come so soon from the habitat the others have, so they know how to play the game. And they hide. I mean, this is what it is. And so the only way to do it, by the way, they see you. And the thing is, you need to see them before they see you. So that's half the fun of this thing. And since there are no pressures, you're spending a week doing this, you know, is sort of trying to beat these guys. And there was one of them, so smart, because the water came down like this and the current turned around a rock. And he sat right there because as you put your line in with your bait, it would go down there and the pressure of the water coming down would find, well, first of all, it would take your hook this way so it wasn't going to catch it. And then the other part of it is eventually the bait would come off and go right down, and this thing got fat just eating all your bait while you couldn't catch it. So we had fun. My wife climbed up on the rock above, and she put her line in this way. I put my line in this way, trying to catch this thing, and it took us 2 days, and we finally caught it. But you see, the only way you can get these is to bring them out of the place of hiding, and then you see you can draw them to the bait. James would suggest that there is a process, and that from that passage would suggest that you see when you fall into sin, it's not because it just happened, if you will, but because there's a building progression. On the other hand, Ephesians would draw a different picture, not contradictory, but different, in the sense that what he's talking about here is a particular day, and maybe it is the culmination, but he doesn't bring that out. He just says there is a particular evil day that we all have, and it's unique to us, a day of temptation. We need to be so, so careful, because as you watch people who succumb, it is because they fail to realize it's a personal struggle and there is a specific evil day. And we remarked last week, the day for Moses was a day of anger. He got mad and struck the rock, and God would not let him go in the land. Like I say, because I want to understand the holiness of God, that is one of the difficult ones for me. David's, of course, was a day of lust. We talked about last week, the day of Hezekiah was a day of pride, because the Babylonians came and the man was proud of what he had. So he takes him and shows him all this, and God says, because of your proud, they will come down and they will destroy this nation. So it was a day of pride. Peter, of course, as we talked about, was a day of fear. I just remind you, before we go any further, that you see, when we deal with Satan, first of all, it's a personal struggle. It is not a war, it's a struggle. And the struggle is there. It's a constant struggle. And secondly, that we face particular evil days. And I warn you, the days will come. Don't know what the day is for you. Whatever the day is for you, the day will come. And so there's that. The other thing that is very evident in here, and I do not have to give to you. I don't. Look at verse 18 with me, if you will, where he starts with a prayer. And it is interesting, because with all prayer, and look at the alls he have with all prayer and petition. We'll come to that later. Pray at all times. So you have all prayer, all times. Be on the alert with all perseverance, petition for all the saints. Now, you got to have an idea that something is about all in here, right? All prayer, all petition, all times. All perseverance, all the saints. It just tells you, we all need prayer. Isn't it fascinating? He isn't saying pray for yourselves. He's saying pray for the saints. How much time do you spend praying for? But anyhow, we're with this, okay? But now notice, the word I'm interested in, and the basic word I'm after in this section is this statement, where he says, be on the alert. Be vigilant. Now you see the issue of this. It's very fascinating, because as you look at this word, the word actually can have the idea of remain without sleep, be awake, and thus vigilant. And it's interesting, because he's talking about this in this context of all, you see, being alert with all perseverance and all petition for all the saints. And so the sense of alertness is there in the prayer that we make, and we need to understand why this is so crucial, that we be attentive, vigilant in this way, because you see, we must never be off guard with respect to the enemies who would like to find us heedless and secure. It is significant for us, because it is, as we look at this business, we face deceptive tactics. Satan, that's why we have to be awake. Satan doesn't come straight at us. It just doesn't happen often. If he does, it's because we're not doing too much. But, usually. It's fascinating, is it not? Looking in Scripture at the way that say, even if you think of Hezekiah. Hezekiah can fight the big battle, see? Hezekiah can bring the letter before God and deal with it. But you see, this other thing he doesn't even anticipate, because they don't come with weapons to the wall. They come just as an emissary to visit him. And this is nice. He feels sort of like Solomon when he's visited by the great Queen Sheba. See, and wants to show everything he has, and he doesn't even realize that Satan is finding a way to get at him, and he is going to succumb, and because of this, God is going to judge. We back again to one of the most incredible statements about this, and that certainly is the example of one of the great, great men of the Bible, and that's Joshua. And we've talked about that, because if there's a book that is the Old Testament correspondence of Ephesians. It is the book of Joshua. And the reason for it is because this be strong, it comes out here. To stand firm and so forth is the same thing you find with Joshua in chapter 1. And so the people have likened this. And they've also, because they've likened the typology, if you will, of the moving into the land and so forth. And so they've built so much out of that. But by the same token, if there's an Old Testament correspondence, is that. And here you find an incredible man, Joshua, and yet what does he do? Doesn't see the Gibeonites and what they're doing. He just doesn't figure it out. You know, he fought the battles and he fought them well, so much so that the Israeli army used the pattern of his military endeavors as a pattern for their six-day war, and they won. The man was great in strategy. Even sometime read what God says. He lost the battle at Ai because of sin. Not because of strategy, but he lost because of sin. So now God says, do this and go up there and I'll give them into your hands. You know what? Just read and look at all the strategy he makes to make sure he's got them on every side in spite of the assurance of God. This man is incredible. But again, I remind you, and I just need to every time I refer to Joshua, you need to understand the book is not a book about Joshua, it's a book about God. Because one of the great times of strategy is when, with regard to the Gibeonites. He'd made a pact with the Gibeonites, and now the Gibeonites are being attacked, and so therefore he knows that he has to go protect them because he made a pact with them. And so therefore he marches all the way through the night, which, by the way, is one of the things that they used in the Six-Day War, which was one of the major features of their victory. He marched all the way through the night, comes against the enemy, and then you recall what happened. God sent hail, and Joshua, it's fun, he loves this. He says, and more people die from the hail than die from the hands of my men. Now, here's a man all the time. Although he understands the battle is God's, the victory is God, there's always strategy, you see. He can fight the enemy, but he can't see the Gibeonites coming. Can't. See, you know the battles. I just warned you. You know the battles. You know they're there, but understand, Satan will come from the side, and if you are not alert, and if you're not vigilant, if you're not awake, it's going to get you, it's going to get me. So he deals with that here and talks about the fact. And then just quickly notice, we face opposition. And what here, just as a background, I can do it from this passage alone, but just walk with me for a while. Daniel chapter 10, just for a while. Head back with me, if you will, the Old Testament. Jeremiah, Lamentation, Ezekiel, Daniel. Daniel chapter 10. And it's all of verses 1 to 13, and I will start with this as you turn there because I really want to look at the latter part. So it's the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia. Message was revealed to Daniel, who was named Belteshazzar. And it goes down this passage, and he now comes, if you will, I will talk to you. Let's go down to verse 11, if you will, and start from there. Then behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. Now actually, we can go back in the previous context to see Daniel praying to God. But now let's come back here. He says, trembling on my hands and knees. And he said to me, verse 11, O Daniel, man of high esteem, understand the words I'm about to tell you. And stand upright, for I have now been sent to you. Daniel 10 and verse 11, the last words. And when he spoke this word to me, I stood up trembling. Then he said to me, Daniel 10:12, do not be afraid, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart on understanding this and on humbling yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come in response to your words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia was withstanding me for 21 days. Then behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left there with the kings of Persia. Now that's interesting. 21 days before, you've asked God for something, and the angel was sent to respond to you, and it took him 21 days to fight through, and the only way he got through is that Michael came to help him get through. That's amazing. See, we're back to this, and as much as I say it, I don't think we comprehend it. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. The battle is not here. The great battle with Satan is yet to be fought, and it's in heaven. Satan has not been cast out of heaven yet. Satan's still up there. The battle, according to Revelation, will be fought. Satan will be cast out of heaven, but it's going to be fought up there, and it's going to be a terrible battle. Satan just is fierce. And so the warfare is not down here, and that's the problem. Just think with yourself at what we pray for. We pray for physical and financial things. We pray for down here things, and we don't understand that the battle is not down here. The battle is up there. And the fact that it takes 21 days for an angel of God to be able to pierce through the satanic forces to get there to answer prayer is amazing. Absolutely phenomenal. So when you go to God in prayer, understand it is not about, you know, just doing it. And it's exciting. Is it not exciting? Now, don't you think God can just go straight through? It's very fascinating. I don't want to get off too much in this, but you just think. He sends an angel to do a job. And the angel's persistent enough to get through, but it takes him 21 days to do it. Now, you know, it could have happened faster, but, you know, you wonder why sometimes it doesn't happen until the last minute. But anyhow, here it is. So you just understand, Satan is opposing our prayers, and Satan will oppose our prayers. Turn with me back, if you will, to the book of 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians chapter 3. See, either our outlook has to change, first of all, and then maybe our vocabulary wouldn't hurt to change a bit. Well, let me start, actually. I want to start early in the book, and then I will move to that section. Let us start with chapter 2 and verse 17, and then we'll move to chapter 3. But we, brethren, chapter 2, verse 17, having been bereft or orphaned from you for a short while, in person, not in spirit. In other words, I'm not there bodily, but I'll tell you what, I've never forgotten you in heart and spirit. We're all the more eager with desire to see your face. For we wanted to come to you. Now you know what's exciting here, this thing. This is a part of a defense. And the defense is this. You know, Paul, you know, this is, when you think about this, Paul plants this church, he started this church, he brings these people to faith in Christ. He is chased out of town because of his defense of the gospel, and yet the new guys come in, and they start opposing Paul. And one of the accusations is they said to the people at Thessalonica, Paul doesn't love you, see? And the whole reason for two chapters, Paul is defending himself, but not defending himself just in person, but defending the fact that he says, I care. And one of those statements about he didn't care, look, he went and left you. See, he's not come back. If he cared, he'd be here. Paul says, listen to me. Notice verse 18, we wanted to come to you, I, Paul, more than once, two times, three times. But notice, Satan thwarted us. Now, go with me to chapter 3 then, because then his concluding prayer of this section, he says, now may our God and Father himself and Jesus Christ the Lord direct our way to you. See? So you see, the only way I'm going to get there is if God enables me to get there, because I have tried to come and Satan thwarted me. Do you understand that at times Satan is opposing what you're trying to do, and he is going to attempt to thwart, and by the way, he's going to be successful. And you see then the whole issue, we go back to prayer again, the only way Paul knows that he can get from here to there is if God himself will bring him there, so he prays to God that God will enable him to be able to see these people, and that God will bring them to the point of fruition in their life. And by the way, you see, if in fact you're frustrated sometimes, there are things you'd like to do for the furtherance of somebody else's life, understand that person belongs to God, and understand Satan may frustrate your attempts to do, but understand that God is still going to bring them to that place of maturity, and he can do it without you as much as he wants you to persist in that which you desire to do. So you understand that what we're doing, we're facing this opposition to our prayers, opposition to our plans, certainly in this context here, opposition in Ephesians, opposition to our progress that we would seek to make. And so, we understand that this is what we face. Daily conflicts, face evil days, we face deceptive tactics, we face incredible opposition from Satan himself. Now, in light of this, we need to recognize who we are dealing with. And so, look with me at this business. First of all, let us go back to where we are here and see that we're dealing with, and as it's, by the way, he deals with this situation. Let's go back to verse 12 again, if you will. So we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but, and I want you to see this here. There are five of these, four negatives. Okay, watch this. It's all pros, see? Look at this, look at them all in a row, see? This pros, the archos are against the rulers. Pros, the exousias against the authorities. Pros, the cosmokratos. This is interesting because here's the word for power, here's the word for world, the world powers. What world powers? The world powers of this darkness. They're not the things we think of. These physical things out here, and here's the last thing against the spiritual wickedness in heavenly places. And again, you understand that, again, that last statement, that it is in heavenly places. We're not dealing with it. The fight is not down here. That is the number one issue, and listen to our prayers, and it seems like the fight is here. The fight is not here, see? So when you find yourself in the midst of a tussle, understand that the warfare is up there and you better settle it there. But notice, if you will, because as you look at this, there is no doubt that what we're dealing with here is Satan, and it is these emphatic statements. And by the way, look at something else here. Look at this. There's no and. Okay, look at this. Against this, and against this, and against again, and against again. There is no and here. There's just simple against. A very forceful way of showing us the opposition that we face with Satan. Now, in light of this, then, first of all, notice that this one is organized. When you deal with this, rulers. We're not dealing with earthly rulers. We're dealing with heavenly rulers. By the way, just go with me to here, Ephesians chapter 1. You see, the essence of even the resurrection is not just that God raised Jesus out of the dead. Chapter 1 and verse, let's go back to verse 18. I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened so that you may see three things. Number one, the past, what is the hope of his calling, future, what are the riches of the glory of his inheritance in the saints, and present, what is the surpassing greatness of his power toward us who believe. Now this power I'm talking about is in accordance with the working of the strength of his might. Now you see the working, strength, might. Three different words for power right here. Then you have another one up in verse 10, 19, tied in with the greatness, tied in with the surpassing greatness. So you have a bunch of words piled together just to show you how powerful God is. It isn't to define all those words individually, it's to put them together and recognize the incredible power of God. Now, what is this power? It's the power he brought about in Christ when he raised him from the dead. Now, that's not where it stops. And he seated him at his right hand in the heavenly places, far above, and here it is again. See, all rule, and all authority, and all power, and all dominion, and every name that is named. You see, and he put all things in subjection under his feet. The great truth of the resurrection, the great truth of Easter, and somehow we will seek to communicate this year, is that sense that God has not just raised him from the dead, God has exalted him to a place of authority over all of these archos. These evil, demonic rulers. They're not earthly rulers, they're demonic rulers. Go with me for a moment to the book written just before this book, very close to it, the book of Colossians, if you will. Notice, I will start in chapter 2 and verse 10, and then you will help me find the next one in here, but we'll find it. But notice this, if you will. He says in chapter 2, two and verse 10, he makes the statement, he says, in him you have been made complete. Now, that's a great statement right there. I mean, just by itself, hard to comprehend. But this next thing, and he, Christ, is the head over all rule and authority. Now, we're doing the same words here, see? This is rule and authority, see? But now watch. Walk down with me further, because you say, what is this rule and authority? Verse 13, when you were dead in your transgressions and uncircumcision of your heart, he made you alive together with him, having forgiven us all our transgressions. Incredible. Having canceled out the certificate debt consisting of decrees against us, which was hostile to us. And here it is. And he has taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross when he had disarmed. Now it isn't disarmed, okay? It is, actually, well, you know what? Let's just let the NSB margin do it for us. I could tell you what it is, but go to the margin and find what it says there, because, see, that way we could all find it for ourselves. And what does it tell you? Does it tell you? Oh, that's not good either. Divest himself. No. The word is. Okay, just wait. Let me tell you exactly what the word is. That's Colossians what? Chapter 2 and verse 15. Now let me tell you the beauty of this word, and I give you the context here. Up above in this section, he's told them to put on some things, or he will tell them. But if let's see, we have it. And yeah, let me show you this. Let me show you. Let me go back 2:15. Just a moment. The word is literally is this. It's by the way. See if I can show you something. I'll try to show you something. Here you go. Look at this. Okay, watch this. This is the positive thing that we're supposed to do. We're supposed to put on. And look at the word to put on is duo and duo. It's to put on ourselves, okay? Now, the word that's found there is this. Correct me, Daniel, if I'm wrong. Apec duo, isn't it? Right. You know what's interesting? This is to put on. This is to put off from. Now, literally what he did, he disrobed these people. You know what happens? Do you remember the battle? It's Ahab, right? Help me. It is Ahab. It is Jehoshaphat. I believe I'm right. He says, you know what? You're going to have trouble. You know what's going to happen. But what he did, you know, they said, don't go putting on your kingly robes. And what they said, but you see, anyhow, whatever. But he gets out there fighting in battle. See, because what happens, they will put on these kingly robes. They head out into battle because I am the king, see, and this is the thing. You're standing out there and it makes all your people go with you. It's like Patton, not behind you, but in the front of his troops going, you see. And you know what he did? He disrobed them all. He took off all of their kingly clothes. He disrobed them. In other words, they're no longer kings dressed up in all of these things. He beat them. He disrobed them. I like that. So here, back to you. Okay, look at this. He disrobed all the rulers and authority. And notice what he did. He didn't just disrobe them. He did what? He made a public display of them, having triumphed over them through him. Now hold it. Who then are these rulers and authorities if in fact he disrobed them and made a public display of them? They are these demonic forces, see. Walk with me. One more time. 1 Peter. Hebrews, James, 1 Peter. And in this book, Peter is talking again about Satan, and he's talking about Christ and his example. Now notice what you will. I am in chapter 3, the great passage of Jesus' death and resurrection. And notice in chapter 3, talking about Jesus Christ. Now, I'll take the last words of verse 21 into verse 22. Through the resurrection of Jesus Christ, so we have this resurrection, who, Christ, is at the right hand of God, having gone into heaven after angels and authorities and powers had been subjected to him. Now, just the point of all of this, if I can go back here again, you see, the point of all of this, of what we're facing, is if you think you're just facing some sloppy outfit, you're not, because what happens is, he starts out here, it is against the rulers. There are. There is an organized, if you want to say army or organized leadership among Satan's angelic forces. And we need to realize that Satan isn't just haphazardly doing what he does. Satan is organized. He has these rulers, he has these authorities, he has these powers. And so the first part of this, he's organized, he's powerful. Notice these, not only the archos, if you will, the rulers. Where are we here? Well, okay, right here, look at these, the authorities, the powers. Love that term. It is a very interesting term. It is the term used, you know, where he says, but as many as received him, to them gave he the power. This is where the authority. I think I'm right, and I'm not going to turn the front right now, but even the statement of Jesus, all authority is given unto me, and I'm sure this is what it is in heaven and on earth. Did you understand something else, by the way? If in Ephesians 1, he has been exalted the right hand of God far above all of these demonic forces, there is no demonic force on earth that is not under his control. Therefore, if I then in chapter 2 have been raised up and have been seated in heavenly places with him, do you understand what? I do not have to be controlled by the forces of sin and evil. There's a statement to you. If in fact Satan and evil is controlling your life, it's not because it has to be, it's because you want it to be. I want it to be. Dealing with someone with a great amount of sin, and a friend who's a great elder said to me, he says, unless the man wants to change more than life itself, he says, it will not happen, see. It is not because it cannot be, it's because we do not wish to let God do it. So we're doing this. But the other word that's found here is this word on, let me find it here. Again, we referred to it. This two things, the word cosmos, world, and power, world powers of this darkness. And so we're dealing with a powerful, 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 powerful being. Satan is that. Certainly he's wicked, and then we do the spiritual wickedness in heavenly places, and then finally he's cunning. He just, if you will, going back up. Notice this word here. This word right here. These methodias, the methods, the stratagems. Let me just see if I can find this. It's an interesting statement that's made here with regard to this. He's not only wicked, he is cunning. Just one moment. I read about this word. The word is methods, wiles, stratagems. It is the word that comes from the verb which means to deceive by promises. The idea is a graphic picture of military ploys to try to deceive us. So we just understand. We face daily conflicts. We face evil days. We face deceptive tactics. We face oppositions. We're dealing with a angelic being, if you will, demonic being, who's organized, powerful, wicked, and cunning. And we'll come back next week. We need to do. What's the word that keeps coming up in this section? I take you back to Watchman Nee's book, Sit, Walk, and Stand, and then the word that keeps coming up here. There's something we have to do. But let me just put this in perspective, because we do have to stand. It keeps coming up. There are two things we have to do. We have to put on. And we have to stand, and we're to stand. There's something definitely we must do, and it isn't just that God does it all. And yet, I want to take you back to this word right here. Finally, and here it is. The word is not to strengthen yourself, but to be strengthened. It's what we call a passive voice. It's the action happens to us. Just to know something, you've got to do something. You have to stand, you have to put on, but you understand when it's all said and done. You cannot win aside from the power of God. It can't happen, see. It can't happen. He empowers. He empowers, and he alone empowers the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand. So the incredible part is there's something I must do, but there's something that I realize only God can do. Which is then, if I understand what's happening here, and I understand what I'm facing, how powerful, how cunning, how crafty Satan is, and how there is the constant struggle, but in a deceptive way, he will come on a given evil day to cause me to succumb or to be deceived or to do whatever. And I understand, you see, there's nothing I can do. I come back to this morning where Dottie Crumb says to us, doctors say only 20% chance, which means, you know, the only way of healing, her statement, I love it, she says, but I know that God doesn't care whether it's 20% or 10%, right? He can do it, and he can. If he can't, there's a problem with our view of God. God can do it, and he doesn't need the percentages. God can even do it if the life is taken. God can give it back if that's a blessing. But the point to be made at this point, as you look at all of this, you see, when we understand God can do it and we understand that we cannot do it without God, and I remind you that when you and I face a day, I would say that all of us here tend to face days feeling that we can basically cope. Feeling that if it comes too bad, we'll cry out, we'll be like Peter, when we start to sink, we'll cry out, Lord, help me, see? We need to cry out, Lord, help me, a lot sooner than that, because we do not understand what we face. We talk about having an eschatological mindset, thinking beyond this world, not being bound to earthly things. But you see, we're not only bound to earthly things on one side, in the sense that these things are the things that blind us, but they blind us from seeing the reality of where the struggle is as well. Anyhow, may God help us. And again, this week, remember the call of Paul is to pray at all times with all perseverance for all the saints. And as we go into time of prayer, or a time of prayer request, if there's a prayer request, I ask you to pray for me. I do ask that. There's no doubt about it. Pray. As I would ask you to pray for everyone here, that God would keep us, help us to not ever succumb, not to be blindsided by something that we're not prepared for. And that God would keep us, keep me ever vigilant and aware and awake to what Satan may be trying to do.